and welcome to another exciting episode of the Commodore 64 Show. I am your host, Mike Dalka, and I want to remind you that, as always, anything we talk about in the show, links, etc., can be found on our website, c64show.com. So let's get into the show. This week, we are going to talk about repairing a Commodore 64. If you missed the first episode, I want to first apologize if you go back and listen to it for the audio quality of the interview. We interviewed Brian Husek, who wrote a book called No Reserve, detailing his experiences buying and selling Commodore 64s and other Commodore computers all across the country, and the audio quality on the interview was terrible, frankly, and that's my fault. I'm going to invite Brian to come back, and hopefully we can get a much better quality sounding interview with a few equipment upgrades that I have in the works. So I think it's still worth going back and listening to the first episode if you're interested in it, because we talk about all the different ways of getting back into Commodore computing today. We talk about popular emulators that you can download for no cost, all the way through buying a Commodore 64 on eBay or somewhere else online. And today we're going to talk about what to do if you've got a Commodore 64 that doesn't work, or if you wind up buying one that doesn't work.
Stay a while. Stay forever.
Now, right off the bat, when I say repairing a Commodore 64, a lot of people are going to say, this episode is not for me. I don't know anything about repairing electronics or computers or anything like that. I just want to ask you to hang in there with me, listen to what I've got to say, because the Commodore 64 was built, you know, in the 80s, and electronics were made much differently than they are today. Today they use miniaturized devices called SMDs, which is short for surface mount devices, and those can be delicate because they're so small, they don't have the heat resistance of older components, and they're also hard to work with because they're so tiny. So if you've looked at modern electronic boards and thought there's no way anyone could fix these, I understand. But Commodore 64s were built in an era where we did not have surface mount devices, and the components are pretty easy to work with if you can figure out what's wrong. And we're going to talk about some ways to figure out what's wrong. There's some diagnostic charts you can use. There is something called the dead test cartridge that you may have heard of. It was originally made by Commodore for technicians to diagnose Commodore 64s that they were repairing. However, those cartridges are now being reproduced, and you can buy them on eBay and other places very cheaply, and get the harness kit that's required. For about $50, you can buy everything that you need in order to diagnose a Commodore 64. And it really consists of just plugging the cartridge in, connecting the harnesses, and reading the errors off the screen. And if you're able to do that, and you have a $10 soldering iron, you can probably fix your Commodore 64 yourself. And we'll talk more about that as we get into the show. Now, there are three things that you will typically do if you're repairing a Commodore 64. One is to replace electrolytic capacitors. Two is to replace voltage regulators. Three is to replace chips. Now, replacing the electrolytic capacitors is something that people do sometimes even before the computer starts showing problems. An electrolytic capacitor is a small electronic device filled with a liquid, and over time that liquid would evaporate. And when these capacitors fail, the computer will sometimes still work, but you'll start getting strange errors. A lot of times, the capacitor failing doesn't totally disable the computer, but it makes it unstable. The function of a capacitor is just to store an electronic charge and then release it at a later time. It's like a short-term rechargeable battery for the system, basically. And that can smooth out irregularities in the current. When it fails, it doesn't really damage anything usually. It just causes things to quit working, but it generally won't damage anything else. So if you have a Commodore 64 that's acting kind of flaky, has random errors, things are working fine, and then there's weird characters appearing on the screen, or programs run sometimes but not others, that sort of thing can indicate that you just need a recap, as a lot of people call it. So a lot of times people will do this ahead of time, but especially if the computer has become unstable, it takes just a tiny bit of talent that you can pick up in an afternoon. You can do a little bit of practicing with a soldering iron and learn how to do this. It's very easy to replace these yourself. It's possible to damage the Commodore 64 with the soldering iron. Don't get me wrong, it's not impossible. But it's unlikely that if you are being reasonable about the length of time you leave the soldering iron on the circuit board that you're soldering on, it's unlikely that you're going to cause any problems. So rather than me try to audibly explain to you how to solder, I would suggest going to YouTube and checking out a few how to solder tutorials and getting yourself a $10 or $15 soldering iron off of Amazon or from the local electronics store if you have one. Home supply stores like Lowe's and Home Depot will have soldering irons. They're very inexpensive, all the way up to quite expensive. Just get an inexpensive one. You don't need anything fancy. And give it a shot. Do a little bit of practice soldering and watch any of the number of videos that are on YouTube. I'll link a couple, but there's a ton out there, so you don't necessarily even need to use the ones that are linked at c64show.com. So your Commodore 64 has been disassembled and you're ready to start recapping. An electrolytic capacitor is a cylindrical shaped object, usually made of an aluminum housing, and it can have two wires sticking out of one end, which is what's known as a radial capacitor, or it can have wires coming out of the two round ends of the cylinder. Those would be axial capacitors. And you don't really need to know any of that other than to make sure that you're ordering the right ones if you're going to an electronics store. Now, there is a section on the C64show.com website that lists where to get the individual components. However, there are a number of sellers on eBay that have put together a kit. You just simply look for the motherboard revision that your Commodore 64 is, and there are individuals that are selling everything that you need. Some include voltage regulators, others include just the capacitors, and I have links to those as well on the website. So that's one good way to start. I'd say for my first Commodore 64 recap adventure, I would just buy the kit. And then what you're going to do is begin desoldering the capacitors that are on your motherboard. And what's important to remember is that electrolytic capacitors have a positive and a negative terminal. You have to make sure that electrolytic capacitors have the negative on the negative side and the positive terminal on the positive side of the motherboard. Now, the board is marked, and the capacitors are marked, although it's not always immediately obvious what the markings on the capacitor mean. So it's a good idea to take a look again online at another source for this, but generally speaking, the negative terminal will be identified, and the terminal that is not identified, therefore, would be the positive side. You need to make absolutely certain that you install the electrolytic capacitor in the same polarity or the same direction as the one that you removed. Otherwise, your system's not going to work. All things considered, replacing the electrolytic capacitors or recapping a Commodore 64 is one of the easiest repair and preventive maintenance things that you can do. It's a great place to get your feet wet. And I recommend that anybody that's serious about their Commodore 64 hobby learn how to do this, because over the years of collecting Commodore 64s, I've had to do this numerous times, and it always produces a more reliable computer as long as your soldering connections are good. All right, well, we've talked about how to replace the electrolytic capacitors. So the next thing that I mentioned you might have to do at some point is to replace the voltage regulators. Now, this is going to be very much like replacing the electrolytic capacitors, with one exception. Voltage regulators have three terminals, whereas an electrolytic capacitor only has two. So it's slightly more difficult as far as the soldering is concerned, because you have to get three solder holes cleared out and three terminals soldered at the same time as opposed to two. However, it's not markedly more difficult. And if you've already replaced the electrolytic capacitors, there are two voltage regulators inside the breadbox version of the Commodore 64. I'm not positive on this. I'll have to double check, but I believe there is only one voltage regulator in the 64C version, or the shortboard Commodore 64s. So replacing those voltage regulators is a good idea. It's not absolutely necessary, because voltage regulators don't tend to fail quite as quickly as the electrolytic capacitors do. However, a failed voltage regulator can do some damage to the components inside your computer by allowing too much voltage to go through the system. There has to be another failure somewhere else in the power supply for that to happen. The voltage regulators in the Commodore 64 are somewhat of a backup mechanism, so a quality power supply lessens the likelihood that those voltage regulators will ever have to perform their function in the first place. However, it's still worth replacing them if it's a Commodore 64 that you want to keep alive. You'll just unsolder these and replace these, and those voltage regulators are essentially a transistor that shunts voltage back to ground after the voltage reaches a certain point. In the breadbox Commodore 64, there is one that is a 5-volt regulator and one that is a 12-volt regulator. And what happens is current flows normally between two of the legs until the voltage reaches the set point. At, let's say, 5.1 volts, current starts also flowing through the third leg, which is connected to ground. And what that does is essentially just routes the voltage through a short circuit back to the ground. And so if your voltage regulators have started to fail and are shunting voltage when they shouldn't, your computer will start acting funny because it'll get too low a voltage, and you'll also notice things like the power supply running hotter than it used to. So those are the indicators that you might need to replace those. If you have any doubt, just go ahead and replace them. They're about $1 a piece online, and again, certain sellers that sell the recap kits also include voltage regulators. So if that's important to you, you might pick one of those kits. So that's the easy stuff. That's the place to start if you want to learn to work on your own Commodore 64s. Now, if you are feeling a little bit more adventurous, or you have a little bit of electronic experience, you can actually replace the ICs that have gone bad. If you have to replace chips, there are two different types of chips that you will find in general on the computer, or two different ways of attaching the chip to the motherboard would be a more appropriate way for me to say that. One way is direct solder chips, and that's exactly what it sounds like. The chip itself is stuck in the holes on the motherboard and soldered into place. The other type, the type that we are much more comfortable replacing, is the socketed chips. And what that means is that there is a socket soldered to the motherboard, and that chip is merely pressed into the socket on the motherboard. Those chips are very easy to replace because the chip is not physically soldered to the board, the socket is. And so you can pry that chip out carefully and push a new one in very quickly and very easily. If you've determined that a socketed IC or a socketed chip is what's bad on your Commodore 64, you can be very confident in your ability to replace that, so long as you are careful, you take precautions against static, and you don't break the chip as you're pushing it in. So even if you're not comfortable soldering, it might be possible for you to replace one of the bad chips on your Commodore 64 if it happens to be a chip that is socketed on your particular motherboard revision. Now, the only way to know that is to open the computer up and look at it, but the way that you would tell that is that you'll quickly see some chips have the prongs stuck directly into the motherboard and are soldered there. Chips that are socketed sit slightly higher off the motherboard, and you'll see some black plastic in between the chip and the motherboard. That black plastic is the socket, and you should be able to verify by just gently prying from one end of that chip and see that the legs start to slide out of the socket. If they're moving out when you apply gentle pressure, then that's a socketed chip, and it's easy for you to replace. Now, you have two options when it comes to replacing the ICs, or chips as you sometimes call them. IC is short for integrated circuit, and those little black rectangles with all the pins on them, what that is essentially a collection of transistors and capacitors, and it's a bunch of electronic components condensed onto a chip form. Some are called logic chips, and what logic chips are is basically the thinking portion of the computer. Certain voltages on certain pins will cause a voltage to appear on other pins, and programmers are able to actually perform calculations by using that combination and reading the voltages off of other pins. For instance, an AND signal might mean that if there is a voltage at this pin and that pin, then signify that the condition is true by causing a voltage on yet another pin. And by connecting several logic ICs together, it's possible to do quite complex calculations. So there are logic chips, and there are also RAM chips, which means the same thing then that it does today. RAM is random access memory. It is the memory the computer uses that is erased when power stops. It is not static memory. It is dynamic memory, meaning that when the voltage is lost, the memory is cleared. There are also other memory chips called ROM memory chips on the Commodore 64 and in modern computers, incidentally. ROM is read-only memory, and it is permanent memory. And that is the basic operating instructions, like the BASIC and they call it the kernel, for instance. Those are instructions that cause the Commodore 64 to start working when power is applied, because that memory doesn't get cleared when the power is turned off. So a ROM chip could go bad as well and need to be replaced. Those are a common thing that when the computer will turn on and the screen goes black or blue, but you're not able to type, you don't see the ready prompt, things like that is usually an indicator that one of your ROM chips is bad. And there are a few chips in the Commodore 64 that are slightly more difficult to replace from the standpoint of finding a duplicate for it is hard, because these were not off-the-shelf chips. These were custom chips made by Commodore. That would be the basic ROM, the SID chip, and the video interface chip. So let's say that you've determined through some of the diagnostic information that will be available on c64show.com that one of these chips needs to be replaced. Replacing it is, again, something that you should watch a video from the website on how to do, but it basically consists of putting something underneath the chip that you're trying to remove very carefully, because there are oftentimes lines on the circuit board, we call them traces, that you can damage if you're not careful. So you have to be gentle when you do this, but you just put something underneath the chip and heat the prongs up, and as the solder melts, the chip lifts away from the board slightly, and you have to just work your way down the chip and patiently work the chip out of the board. It sounds like a pain, but it's really not that hard to do, and I have a plastic screwdriver, which sounds strange, but it's a plastic screwdriver, and it works great for doing this. You could also use a toothpick or just any sort of plastic post you might have around, a Starbucks stir stick I've seen used effectively at this. These things are less likely to damage the circuit board, and you put them underneath the chip. You apply gentle pressure as you heat the prongs, and the chip will eventually work its way out. Now that you have the chip out, you have some options. You can either replace the chip with an identical old stock chip, either pulled from a dead Commodore 64 or a new old stock source, or you can replace the chip with a modern EPROM. And what an EPROM is it stands for Erasable Programmable Read-Only Memory. You can write new instructions onto this chip, and once the power is turned off, the chip retains those instructions, but it could later be erased and reprogrammed again. People are reproducing the Commodore 64 chips with these EPROMs, so there are adapters that you'll have to solder. I'm hoping that I don't make this sound too much more confusing. It's really not bad. It's really not confusing. It's very simple. It's soldering in something just the same as any other chip, so if you're comfortable replacing a chip with an EPROM is really no different. This also opens up the possibility of reprogramming the functions of your Commodore 64. I'm not going to get into that a lot today. We'll probably talk about that in another episode, but if you're interested, you can do a little bit of research on, search the term custom ROMs for Commodore 64, and you'll find that there are all sorts of neat tricks and customizations that people do, and by replacing the basic kernel or basic ROM in your Commodore 64, you can change the way it operates and add features or delete features you don't need to make the computer run slightly faster. There's all sorts of neat things you can do, and it's enough to make its own episode, so like I said, we'll talk about that more in a future episode, but in the meantime, just do a little Googling and check out some forums if you're interested in that. Everybody wants you. Well, that just about does it for another episode of the Commodore 64 Show. Thanks for listening. I am your host, Mike Dalka. We will be back again soon with another episode. If you listened to the first episode when it came out, I'd like to apologize for the long delay. I recently had to complete a certification exam for work, and then I had coronavirus. So it took me a while to get this next episode out. We're going to try to do one every other week from now on going forward, so please keep checking back at anchor.fm. C64show.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to the show from. Check back often, subscribe, and we will have another episode out soon.
Mission accomplished. Congratulations.